You're listening to The Takeaway.
I'm Catherine Lanfer in for John Hockenberry. You know what those beats are. All over the world, people know this is the beginning to the song Billie Jean from the album Thriller. Now, Michael Jackson, what kind of legacy does he leave? He is the king of pop. He's dead at 50. We are talking about his work today, his legacy, what he leaves behind. You should tell us your thoughts. That's 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org. We're joined now by Brian Raftery. He's a contributing writer for Spin Magazine, and also Bill Wyman, former arts editor for Salon and author of the blog Hitsville. Bill, we're going to start with you. Michael Jackson, even decades down the road, what's the first thing people are going to attach to his name, do you think?
Good morning, Catherine. Well, obviously, I think they're going to attach the song you're playing underneath, which kicked off Billie Jean, which kicked off the selling spree of Thriller, which for a long time was the largest selling record of all time. And I think you got to give him credit that he did conceive of that record. He designed it to be the biggest selling record of all time, and he pulled it off.
What do you mean he designed it to be the biggest selling record of all time?
Well, I think in comparison to Elvis Presley and the Beatles, who I think Elvis Presley envisioned a mass amalgamation of all these musical styles, and the Beatles obviously encapsulated this joy of the period. But Michael Jackson was someone who came after those. He understood what superstardom was. He put together a really great timeless record called Off the Wall, which was his first record as an adult. It was a very popular record and a successful record, but he never felt it got the due he thought it deserved. It didn't get the Grammys that for some reason he thought were important. And when he and Quincy Jones set out for the next record, it was really designed to be this sort of a record, a world-changing album. And you have to also give him credit because, according to the biographies, Quincy Jones didn't like Billie Jean, and Michael Jackson had to fight to do it. He had to fight to keep that bass line in and fight to keep that long intro in. And I don't know about you, but I can certainly remember where I was the first time I heard that. And of course, he capitalized on that with that famous performance at the Motown 25 special, which is also sometimes forgotten, where he did his famous little moonwalk, and that was it was a great musical moment, but it was also a great marketing moment, and the song and the appearance really set Thriller into the stratosphere sales-wise.
Now, Brian Raftery, I've noticed that you've been nodding your head at certain points. Unleash yourself. Go ahead.
Well, it's hard not to nod to Billie Jean. I mean, I think any musician probably has bass envy whenever that line comes on.
Bass envy, is that our takeaway for the day?
Yeah, exactly.
I like
sure.
That.
Why not? We can coin that. It's interesting, you know, to think about what the legacy is going to be, because I think there are very few musicians or celebrities in general who it's been as difficult to be a fan of as Michael Jackson. I mean, I think, you know, I mean like a real sort of rational, critical fan. Michael Jackson, and I don't want to pick on them on a day where it's very hard. He has a lot of fans who are a little over the top, a little bit way too devotional, but you know, it's gotten to a point in the early 90s, mid-90s, when things were going really bad, where he was overshadowed by a lot of really terrible accusations. And at that time, I was thinking, could I even actually really listen to Michael Jackson songs again without being the first thing I hear, being, you know, these lawyers asking questions and him giving these weird statements on TV? And I think ultimately the music is good enough to transcend that. But I think he's going to have sort of this mythology like Elvis, where for some people, part of the appeal will always be that he was very eccentric and that they wanted there going to be stories and biographies written about Michael Jackson's personal life and not his music for years and years and years.
Well, and I'm wondering how much of that, going back to you for a minute, Bill Wyman, how much of that is the price of the superstardom that he was so avid to achieve?
I take the point. It's not, as a rule, I don't feel sorry for rock stars. I think we have to stipulate that. It was a little bit difficult for him, but at the same time, I'm with Brian. I don't give him any leeway on this at all. He surrounded himself with courtiers and entourages and layer upon layer of managers and publicists. He isolated himself. He was crazy. He, you know, seemed obviously to be a sex predator. He actually couldn't do what he's supposed to do, which is produce good, effective music. I think he only put out maybe, what, half a dozen albums as an adult, which just seems crazy over 25 years, and 30 years now that I think about it. So I think we should remember that he was a guy who was severely disturbed. Now, I think you have to go back to his childhood, which I think can make us feel a little bit more sorry for him because he did not have a normal childhood.
I think we're going to hear that a lot as the discussion shifts from his music to his life. What was the cost of his childhood? Brian?
Go ahead, Bill. Well, this is one of my pet things, so I think people should remember this, that we all think, oh, Motown Records, how great Motown Records was. But he learned a lot of really bad things at that time. He learned Motown wasn't honest about anything. Nothing that was ever put out about him was true. Motown barely paid his family. They were one of the biggest selling acts on the label. The family might have gotten a credit for 10 cents royalties per CD, CD album at the time. And, of course, they had all these things deducted against it. So I think the family was ripped off from Motown. When they finally left the label wouldn't even let them record under their own name, the Jackson 5, and they even sort of, in this sort of biblical way, took a brother from them. Jermaine stayed with the label, and he got married to Berry Gordy's daughter. So I think he learned a lot of bad things very, very early on. Not to mention, going on tour is not a thing that a 9, 10, 11-year-old boy should do. When you read the biographies, you know, the things that went on tour, when your brothers are doing it literally in the motel bed next to you, that's not a really good environment. I think his idea of sexuality and relationships were not good. Plus the fact his father had affairs away from his mother and even had a child by another woman. And I think a lot of the family didn't grow up in a great environment.
Okay. Brian Raftery, I want to make sure that you get a last word here.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think, you know, what is going to last with Michael Jackson a lot, and I think the reason why you see a lot of very young kids on TV crying who, you know, you wouldn't even think would be aware of Michael Jackson at 8, 9, 10 years old is this whole idea of this incredibly sad childhood he had and how much he could never really quite let that go. And that's a lot of armchair psychology there. But I do think that's one of the reasons why people in various generations always kind of related to him. I mean, I think they felt that he sort of understood the sadness of being a child. What happened, though, is that, you know, as he got older, that kind of childlike quality started to get very unnerving. And that's sort of the duality of what happened with him as a kid and how it sort of affected, his grown-up life.
Okay. Both of you, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Bill Wyman, thanks for your insight. Former arts editor for Salon. He has the blog Hitsville. And Brian Raftery, contributing writer for Spin Magazine. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.